broadcast room of the Geek Gala HQ. There are assembled Charlotte, North Carolina's four okayest geeks, created by the cosmic legends of their own mind. Starnslord, the Giddy Geeker, Carol the Cat, Tipples Tannenbaum. Their mission, to support local, to discuss all things geek, and to serve all fankind. They are the Guardians of the Geekery, the official podcast of the Charlotte Geeks.
I'm just going to point to you when we're live.
I don't like recording. You pointing your finger at me. Point. It's very accusatory.
Oh, I'm just going to point at myself when we're recording.
That motion probably would get us the explicit rating if we were visual. All right. We're live. Hey, Brian's here.
Hello.
Hi, Brian.
Hi.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah.
I know it was a long journey. And
We've known Brian for a long time. I've known him for 3 weeks.
Give or take,
you know, and when I say 3 weeks, like, what, 2 half-hour increments, so we go back pretty far, pretty deep. So
exactly, I mean, except for the time maybe a year ago when I posted a ad for a show
without my permission
on the wrong site.
I knew it. I told Matt after the wedding, I'm like, I pissed him off.
No, you didn't piss me off at all. It was, I like following rules.
I was like, because when Kevin introduced us, he was like, oh, is that the site where you have to post it one place or the other place? And then he was kind of like, yeah. Yeah. But I was like, oh no, what did I say to you?
No, you said, don't post it here, post it here. You actually gave me the link of the proper place to post it. There was no...
It was a good day.
It was perfectly fine.
If you're like the 10th person who's quote-unquote spammed my page without reading the pinned post, they make it a little easier now on Facebook. They give you a place to like tell you what rule you disobeyed. And in my rule, I give it. But, you know, I give the new link or I give the name of the page you're supposed to go on. But I'm always like, oh, did you hit me on a bad day? Because some days I'm just like, you know better. You know, when it's the fifth time that somebody's posted on the wrong page. But yeah, we do that to kind of keep the Facebook page clean.
I appreciate it. And, you know, I'm constantly, when I have a show, I'm constantly out there posting it everywhere. Oh, and yeah. I start to annoy myself. So if I have any sort of adverse reaction, it was like, oh, yeah, okay, I didn't read that. I probably should have read that.
And I mean, I'm the same way, because if I'm posting something, I'll share it like 10 times. But... And, you know, if it's been a month since I've shared, I'll be like, what's the rule for that one? I'm going to post it and apologize later. But you have a show coming up this weekend. Well, it actually started last weekend, right?
Yes, we opened on Friday.
Yeah. So, and it's up in Cornelius, which really isn't that far from Charlotte at all. It's a hop, skip, and a jump.
Hop, skip, and a jump. 20 minutes.
Yeah. So, and it's called, this is like much longer than even the Geeky Tiki Slumber Party Arama, which I thought was a pretty long title to begin with. There's not even a good acronym for it. So, not an acronym. Anyway, but it is.
I was trying to look at what that would be, actually. It's like,
go ahead. Go right ahead.
An apology for the course and outcome of certain events delivered by Dr. John Faustus on this, his final evening.
Yeah, say that 10 times fast.
Do you have a hashtag for that? Or?
It was written by Mikkel Maher, who's a playwright residing in Chicago. And it is a take on the Faustus legend. And for anyone not familiar with the Faustus legend, it's one of the first soldiers sold to the devil stories. Yeah. Dr. John Faustus comes to the end of known scholarship and knowledge, human knowledge, and against the wishes of the church, starts to dabble in the supernatural because he wants to know more. He wants to know about who made the universe. He makes a deal with the devil, who gives him his servant, Mephistopheles, for 24 years and the keys to the universe. And the only hitch is he has to hand over his body and soul once the 24 years is up. This play takes place in the final hour of Dr. Faustus's life.
Ooh.
And as I like to say, he may have some regrets.
Yeah. The last hour's a killer, isn't it?
Literally.
That sounds really cool. Yeah.
Literally a killer. Yeah, so I'm assuming then that the play's an hour long.
Yes, it is approximately 60 minutes long.
Because wow. Otherwise that wouldn't work.
No, it's approximately 60 minutes long. It's a two-person play. It was directed by Robin Witt, who's a professor at UNC Charlotte. Was also a recent director at Steppenwolf in Chicago.
Nice.
And it's got my co-star is Bill Riley, who's done a bunch of work with the Davidson Players and other theaters in the area. It's at the Warehouse Performing Arts Center on Westmoreland, which is right near Boatyard Eats and Tenders. That's the only landmarks I can think of. It's just north of Sam Fur Road. Like I said, 20 minutes. What I've learned about Charlotte is everything is 20 minutes away.
Yeah, it's all a matter of which way you go.
Right.
Unless there's construction, then it's 2 hours.
Right, and it is off of 77, so we don't want to get into that nightmare. But
that's a good place to have a play, though. We've gone to at least one there, I think.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm assuming you're playing Dr. Faustus?
I am playing Dr. Faustus.
And do you agree with his regrets?
Do I agree with his regrets?
I'm trying to think of a question somebody may not have asked you yet.
I agree with his regrets. If you're familiar with the original Christopher Marlowe play, and Christopher Marlowe was a contemporary of Shakespeare, so to put it in a time context, he gets these powers. He gets this magical power and this wisdom. And can I swear on this?
Absolutely. Yeah.
No fucking way.
And he fucks around with it. He plays pranks on the Pope. He goes back in time and nails Helen of Troy. He wastes it on a word my director loved to use, frippery.
Nice word. Yeah. I like that.
And that's in the Marlowe play. Obviously not this one. The Goethe play is... That's another story entirely.
Yeah.
We don't need to get into that because I'm not that familiar with it. You know, Goethe. Try spelling that.
Yeah.
Do I agree with it? Yes, absolutely. But I think it also deals with certain... I was attracted to the script because I think it deals with certain aspects that are... It's not blatant, but certain aspects of privilege. Of expectation, of believing that you are deserving of, you know, Faustus believed he deserved the knowledge of the universe.
Mm. Right.
He believed.
That's pretty ballsy, right?
Yeah. Right?
For a mortal, yeah.
For a mortal. At the time that the play came out, it was pilloried as the most anti-Christian play. And then there were other sects of the same. At the same time, they were saying it was one of the most Christian plays. There are actually two versions of the Christopher Marlowe, and one, he does end up being damned, and demons carry him away and tear him to shreds. And in another version, he repents and is saved.
And you'll have to come and find out find out which version you're doing.
Right.
Yeah, I am familiar with the play as an opera. So when I was in college... I was in one of the touring choirs and performing choirs, and so we had to perform at least once a month, every month, and then we were voluntold that we could either be in the opera or you have to, like, you were required to go to the opera, so, but I was like, no, I totally want to be in it, but... 1 year it was Mephistopheles. So it was told from the Mephistopheles point of view as opposed to the Dr. Faustus point of view. And it was interesting because on the one hand, you're so busy learning the Italian and singing and figuring out how to get from point A to point B and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden you're watching it backstage and you're like, wow, this is crazy. But yeah, it was it gives you a lot to think about. It's definitely a thinking man's story.
And that is definitely the reaction that we've gotten, is that it makes people think. We've gotten really good, people have said very nice things about it so far, but it's definitely weighty. You know, sure. It's got some ideas behind it. It's also very theatrical, meaning it's not Neil Simon or Mamma Mia, which was done 8 times in the Charlotte area in the past 12 months. Rough. God bless Mamma Mia. Don't get me wrong. I mean,
but that's a lot of Mamma Mia.
Any theater is good theater, and you know, there should be more theater.
Yes.
But that's a lot of Mamma Mia.
It's a lot of Mamma Mia. Yeah. No, Thinking Man's Theater is a good theater. So what is this done as a theater in the round? Is this done on a stage?
It's on stage. The Warehouse is a 55-seat theater, so it's very much black box, very intimate. You know, I'm out in the audience a couple of times, handing things out, various things which you won't know unless you come see the show. I moved down here from Chicago 4 years ago. Mm. Where storefront was, you know, that was our bread and butter. There's like 250, at least there were, there might be more or less now, okay. 250 working theater companies in Chicago.
Wow.
Vast majority of them are non-equity, working in a converted storefront or something like that. So that's where, you know, and we ran a theater company up there called Wild Claw, which I was a founder and managing director of, and that specialized in bringing horror to the stage. Monsters and zombies and vampires, and we were always working out of some storefront or another, so this is very much in that vein. I've looked for a space like this, and unfortunately this is the only one I found. The closest thing I can come to is Catch, the Comedy Arts Theater. No, Charlotte, I don't know, Catch, it's the Improv Theater on South Boulevard. CATCH is the acronym, and it's the Comedy Arts Theater of Charlotte is the name of it.
He did it.
Yeah.
Hooray. Wow,
but they're in a strip mall, and they've converted, you know, one of these empty storefronts into a theater.
Okay. Yeah.
Which I would love to see more of that happen. I've contacted some folks. Charlotte's not really, they haven't wrapped their mind around that concept as a city just yet.
Well, yes and no. So Noda Brewery did Shakespeare in the Parking Lot. and so they did a with Paper House Theater.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Paper House.
Or no, Shakespeare. Shakespeare did it. Shakespeare in the Parking Lot. And so you do get that every once in a while. And then Noda also, Shakespeare did... does a Christmas show out of there. But, and then what was the other place? Oh, Paper House Theater, Andrea King's group, has done one in a storefront where, like, literally they let them come into the store at night and convert it.
That's the Frock Shop, right?
Right.
Yes, I've seen a performance there.
Yeah, but you're right. We don't just have little... storefronts popping up.
And I think the problem is right now, like I hadn't been to South End in a while, and I went a couple weeks ago for a meeting, and I was just surprised. Like all the older buildings that were 1-2 story were demolished, and they were going up 14, 16 stories in South End.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was shocked. I did not know about that. I feel so silly for not knowing, but I don't get down there very often.
And it's this whole, you know, it's the catch-22. Charlotte was named like one of the best cities to live because of all of the arts. And then in order to make all of these apartments and condos and nondescript buildings, they tore down all of the infrastructure that made Charlotte so unique. Yeah. And then people come here and they're like, where is everything? And I think that's part of why, Noda, you know, so much of Noda got ripped apart. All of our favorite places to go see comedy and stuff like that got ripped apart. And so... you know, we've constantly had our friends trying to find new places to do their performances. Robot Johnson doing it at Evening Muse because Upper Stage is gone, and Our upstage is gone. And
upstage, they left just before I started here. That's one of the reasons, there are two reasons for the name Cartage Theater. And one is because of the lack of space currently in Charlotte to perform and to rehearse. And particularly, you know, a show like this, we've got a proper set. We've got a proper light grid. We've got a proper sound design. Yeah. So it's not something that we can throw up in a day and take down and carry away. So when we started doing things with Cartage Theater, we were doing audio dramas where we could go to the back of a bar. We were doing them at places like, we were doing them at Free Range before they put in their Sweet Sound System. We were doing them at, we did for Boom, we were at Snug Harbor. And that's the kind of thing where we can come in, we do live sound effects, actors on script, we do, 10-minute, 15-minute radio plays live in front of a live audience. And that's the kind of thing that you can throw up in a couple hours.
Right.
And because the actors are on script, you don't need nearly as much rehearsal.
Yeah.
And then you can pack everything in your car. You can set it up that night. You can be, you know, once the show's over, you pack your car back up and you're out. No one ever knew you were there. And the idea being that we wanted to design something that you could cart from one place to the other.
Well, there you go. Yeah. That's cool.
Are you still doing those? Or?
We are. This is the first full production that we've done in our existence.
Okay.
But we will be doing another one. And then when we do that, and I will let you guys know when that comes, we usually take submissions. So anyone who wants to submit a 10 to 20 minute audio script, often on a theme. We've done science fiction, we've done horror, and we've done folk North Carolina folk tales.
Cool.
Very cool.
Have to have you back on to talk about that with some of the...
So how did you get into theater?
I was a horrible student, and I think it was in sixth grade with Mrs. Delara, and I was doing very badly in her English class, and she had... She came up and said, I'm going to take you out of my fifth period English class and put you in my third period English class because it's smaller and you'll get more attention. And in doing so, you're going to have to take drama. And my first reaction was, absolutely not. That's for losers. And she said, okay, well, then you can stay in my fifth period English class and fail. And I said, drama's for me. And I made the switch, and I came home and quickly told my mom I wanted to be an actor. And my mother, who loved me dearly and rarely said a negative word, you know, I could do whatever I wanted, I could be whatever I wanted. She had a history in theater, and she looked at me and she said, Brian, you don't even do your homework. Theater's too hard. Pick something else.
Oh my gosh.
Thanks for the love.
You're
Mama.
Like, oh wow.
You know, in a certain respect, it was a perfect introduction to the world of acting because that's what you're gonna hear everywhere you go.
It's tough, right?
No. And if you listen to it, you should probably get out.
Right.
So it was a good introduction. But from there, and then I didn't do it for a long time. I mean, I did it in middle school, and I did some in high school, and then I didn't do it for a while. And I went from high school to a community college, and I was sort of kicking around there, and I thought I'd take drama because it was easy. And at the end of the year, we had to meet with our teacher, and most of these meetings went for about 10 minutes, and my meeting went for 45 minutes. And the teacher said to me, you need to dedicate a year of your life to this, or else you're going to wake up at 45 and regret it. And so I did, and then ended up dedicating the better part of my life to it, and then still woke up at 45 and regret it, but for entirely different reasons.
Oh, man.
Not really. I love it. I can't get away from it. This is the closest I'm going to ever get to professional sports, to dance, and to religion. So,
what's your favorite role as you've gone through theater? Because I know a lot of times, you know, especially in small productions, you're building a set, you're doing all these different hats and juggling some stuff.
So. My favorite role, acting wise, probably was at the Lifeline Theater in Chicago. I worked there a bunch of times, and I got to play Longstreet. In Killer Angels, which was the Michael Schara Gettysburg novel.
Oh,
historical fiction. Wow. Gettysburg. They based the movie Gettysburg off of it. And I got to play Longstreet, and that was remarkable. It was a long run. It was a remarkable production. And it also happened. It was fascinating on all sorts of different levels, but we opened right after we invaded Iraq in the early 2000s.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And if you remember, the mood in certain circles was kind of rah, rah, rah.
Yeah.
But the run was long enough, so we were still doing the play 6 weeks later when the mood had changed. And so certain parts of the play that resonated in the first couple of weeks didn't resonate anymore, and brand new parts were resonating as people, audience itself sort of got weary of... that was probably my favorite as an actor. But this being the Charlotte Geek podcast, I should probably say I got to play Gandalf in the original stage adaptation of The Lord of the Fellowship of the Ring. And you can check this on Wikipedia. I originated the role of Treebeard on the American stage.
Whoa.
Wow.
I mean, it was in a 100-seat theater in Chicago, same one, Lifeline Theater. But
hey,
no one played Treebeard on the American stage before me.
Nice.
That is a distinction you will always have.
Yeah, we did the same theater, Lifeline, staged all three. I was in the second two towers and Return of the King.
Okay.
And when I got to play Gandalf, there was one night, which I don't think anyone else is ever going to have this experience on stage. I had a staff, of course. It was not a fancy staff. It was a sturdy, good theatrical prop staff. And we had people coming in because, you know, Lord of the Rings fans. This was before the movies came out. So,
oh my gosh.
So the fans were hardcore. There were no casual Lord of the Rings fans.
Right.
And so word got out all over the Midwest. It was in American Theater Magazine that we were doing this. And so people were coming in from Wisconsin and Michigan and some from Ohio to see the show.
Yeah.
And I go out one night with my staff at the beginning of the show, and I look, and there's a gentleman in the front row with these flowing white with gold lace robes. And he has this gorgeous ivory staff with this giant crystal on the top. And I experienced staff envy.
I can believe that. People
showed up with ears and, you know, all sorts. It was a lot of fun.
Cosplaying when it was just kind of the breaking in a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember when I went to Dragon Con and, if you've never been to Dragon Con, it's just 80,000 of us geeks just hanging out. And so it would not be uncommon to stand at a street light waiting for your turn to cross and have a ninja on one side of you and a pirate and Star Trek and Star Wars and all that kind of stuff. So we went in, some friends and I had shown up. This is back in 2008. So it was my second Dragon Con and I was bringing them around and, you know, it was their first time, so they were just kind of in streetwear and everything, and so was I. And we sat down, and the Hooters girl, because that was the only place where there were still seats, came up, and she was, like, treating us like, oh, you guys are, like, normal, you know? And then all of a sudden, she realized that out of the corner of my hair, which was down, there were little elf ears pointing out, and she goes, oh. But it's different now. I mean, even now. It, as opposed to 2008, I mean, the acceptance and the worldwide acknowledgement of fandoms is just so different. I mean, we really are in the golden age.
I had a deep dive into that because with Wild Claw, which is still in existence today, we used to go and do a lot of publicity at the Fangoria, and in Chicago they had C2E2, which is their comic book, big comic book convention, and also Flashback Weekend they have, which is movie memorabilia.
Ooh, okay.
And we did a couple at the Fangoria when we did a panel discussion. We followed the cast of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which had a big crowd, and then it was over, and then we had like 20 people. But we were appreciative of those 20 people, and we were doing, what show were we doing? Legion, I think, which was the sequel to The Exorcist by William Peter Blatty. Nice. And we got some good questions. There was a guy in the audience asking questions. And they were intelligent questions. And when we were finished, he came up and he started talking to me, and I was talking to him. And then I realized he was wearing these yellow cat eye contact lenses.
Oh,
freaky, isn't it?
I didn't, you know, I was well into the conversation before I realized that. And it was just a matter of me trying to remain focused and not react.
Always a challenge. Yeah. Always a challenge. But yeah, no, it's definitely, it's always interesting. And then, you know, as somebody who's run the Charlotte Geek since inception in 2008, a lot of times, a lot of our fellow geeks come up and they just start talking to me about stuff. And I've learned a lot in my 11 plus years of running the geekdoms. But, you know, many of us come in with one fandom, maybe. Maybe we're Star Wars. Maybe we're Star Trek. Maybe we're into gaming. Maybe we're into Doctor Who or Firefly or whatever. And then as you go around to these different conventions, then you're like, oh, what's this? What's that? The other thing. And sometimes people come up and they just start talking to me, and I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. But I appreciate so much the passion. Yes. You know, you can see how enthusiastic they are about it. And I'm like, okay, I don't understand it. I applaud your passion, and now I'm going to find out about it. And that's like the thing when we're working conventions at our booth or whatever, is these people walk by in these amazing costumes. I have no idea what they are. And so I'm constantly like, hey, do you know what that is? Do you know what that is? And so now I've got a circle of friends where each of us has our own like little niche of knowledge. So it's like you can do that phone a friend thing where it's like you take a picture of somebody and be like, what fandom is this? And somebody tells you.
So. That's where my wife comes in handy. She has a, she's super smart and has a ridiculous trove of pop culture knowledge. So there's very few things. She's also a costume designer, so she pays attention to these things very, very closely. She's got a group coming in. She's like, I think it's Costume Society of America at UNC this weekend, and she's presenting a paper on the fetish wear of Farscape, or actually, it may be broader than that. It may be fetish wear in science fiction. But I think it started on a paper she wrote years ago, Fetish Wear in Farscape. Very which cool. I didn't realize it was a big deal, but it was. There was a lot of fetish wear back in those things.
Yeah, there was an article going around recently where it's like these iconic movie scenes or outfits or whatever as recreated from art back in the 1500s, 1600s, whatever, and they were doing like side-by-side comparisons, and one of them was Lilo from Fifth Element, and like that her outfit was almost identical to an image of a piece of art from like the 1560s or something. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is crazy, but it's interesting what you said a moment ago, how much more accepted it is. And I don't know if I realized it wasn't accepted, because I always sort of had a bent towards that, you know, comic books and superheroes and horror movies and all of that stuff. You know, when I was in theater, we just started calling that genre, right? It's really no different than Westerns and film noir. And, you know, it's all, it's all about a certain aesthetic that you're digging. I don't know about accepted. Sure, you're right, but more prevalent, absolutely. Yeah. Just so much, you know, and the whole cosplay thing. I mean, I don't even want to get into the furries. I got no problem with the furries, but that's taking cosplay to another level.
Well, and then cosplay has gone beyond cosplay into bounding, which was started by Disney fans who weren't allowed as adults to dress like their favorite characters because they didn't want to confuse the children. And so they would dress similarly to the characters without dressing as the characters. So, you know, a girl that liked Belle might carry around a purse that was like a book, and she might have a blue and white jumper on. But she certainly wasn't Belle, you know. And we have a friend that literally she bounds every day. Like every day she's actually low-key cosplaying a character, you know, and you can ask her who she is that day, and she's like, oh, I'm Jean Grey. And it's because she's wearing the same colors as would be in the outfit.
Oh, but
it's
cool. Such
a way. Yeah. And it's like, that's when you know that it's been accepted, when you've actually figured out a way to mainstream it into everyday life.
Right. When you're Jean Grey and you're in front of a board of directors and you're looking at a bar graph.
Yeah, and they have no idea.
They have no idea.
But, yeah.
It's always interesting for me, and because, you know, I've been doing theater since I was in middle school. So it's sort of tied into the Halloween thing. I like Halloween. I appreciate cosplay. But particularly, I haven't done a lot of shows in the past couple of years here in Charlotte, but, you know, I was doing 2 or 3 shows a year. So getting dressed up and being someone else was not what I wanted to do in my off hours.
Right. That's fair enough for you.
Yeah. It's like, I appreciate it. I love it. I love that you guys are doing it. I love that everybody gets to have that experience of being someone else.
Right.
But for me, I'm off work.
Yeah. That's a great perspective.
Yeah. I mean, for us is, you do a little bit of cosplay, but we kind of do it on,
if I get a good idea, I'll do something, but I like to do something I haven't seen before.
Just right.
To test it out, but
I think I tried to do cosplay for a little while because I thought it was cool. And then I realized, okay, I want to dress according to my body type. And I realized that as a fan, you can dress any way you want and you can represent anyone. And I'm all about the inclusivity. But for me personally, I don't want to be Princess Leia in the slave girl outfit because that's just not where I am. So I would rather come up with my own mashup of silliness and just have it be. So I think we've, you know,
my favorite that you've done is at one of the galas was Flava Flash.
Yeah.
Which is Flava Flav with mash the Flash.
The Flash, yeah. So I had the Viking helmet and I had little lightning earrings and I had a big clock with a lightning bolt through the middle of it around my neck. And so I was in the red and yellow, but I had the Flava Flash.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And then you've done Old Man Tick, which was Old Man Logan, wife beater. Kind of outfit with
spoons instead of claws.
Yeah. And then I had a Luna Lovegood pair of glasses and a pair of the Tick
antenna.
That's the word I was looking for. And so I was lunatic. So nice. But you know, it's like, but then that way nobody's like, oh, well, you know, look at what she's trying to do, fat Laura Croft, you know, like, well, whatever.
Fuck those people.
Well, I'd rather not, actually. I'm married and kind of monogamous. Right. Trying to keep it that way.
And I wasn't cosplaying, but the best costume I ever came up with, I was working at a bar, and they forced us to wear a costume. And so I had this dingy old yellow sweatsuit, you know, yellow pant, bright yellow. All my friends wanted to burn it, but I was very comfortable. So I wore that. I got some stencil letters across my chest, said Banana Man. I got a belt. I put 2 bananas in the holster, painted my face yellow. Boom, I'm done.
Nice.
And I got to the bar, and I'm there for about an hour, and this guy comes in wearing a toga and a full head grape mask, like a bunch of grapes mask, like the Fruit of the Loom grapes. And he looks at me, and he walks over to me. He says, you know, I have a banana mask at home. It would take me 5 minutes to get it. And he went home and he comes back and it's this full head banana mask where the peel opens up to my face. I put that mask on and I became Banana Man.
I used to have that mask. I wore it with a yellow toga. But on the air, one of my DJ names back in the day was Banana Jack.
Okay.
It was Guerrilla Radio, and all this stuff. But it's like, yeah, I wore this yellow toga. And but I love that mask. I wore that thing. I wore that same costume forever.
Oh, it's a great mask.
Mask just disintegrated, basically. Yeah. But yeah, that's so fun. That's so fun. But you painted your face yellow too. You went the extra yard. I like that.
Well, yeah,
the extra mile on that. Yeah,
yeah.
Well,
you
know. Then the banana holsters. I love that.
Yeah, one of at the radio station, one of the programming directors, she walked in one day and she was dressed in all pink, and she had like a pink hat and everything like that. And we were like, are you going to participate in the costume thing? And she's like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And later on, she comes out. She gets a name tag and she puts it on. It said Floyd. She was Pink Floyd. I was like, okay, you win. I was just like, because she's like the end of the day. She had to go pick up her kids and everything. She just took the little badge off. She was done. I was like, you slay me.
Yeah, so. That's good.
Yeah, I was a serial killer. I had a box of Chex with a bunch of knives in it and just wore that around. So I was like, again, you know, just I was done for the day. I could just take it off. So it was pretty fun. But what you cannot take off is when you've sold your soul to the devil,
that's
you can't
right.
always get it back.
I want to tell your listeners while I'm thinking about it that in celebration of coming on your fabulous podcast and having come to your fabulously successful Muggles Market, I have instituted a special discount code in honor of the podcast, and that is the word diary. Diary will get you $5 off of a ticket. So you can either do that at the door or you when you go to the page, which is you can go to cartagetheater.com, CARTAGE.com, or you can go to the Warehouse Performance Arts Center, and I don't know what the website is. It's the Warehouse Pack, Warehouse Performing Arts Center. You'll find it. Mm-hmm. When you're buying your tickets, it'll have a little code section. Put in diary. You'll get $5 off of your full ticket price. So
I remember diary is spelled D-I-A-R-Y, not dairy as in moo, D-A-I-R-Y.
Fucking code's not working, man. What's up?
So when all else fails, make sure that your left finger didn't get ahead of your right finger when you're typing. Happen. So
as my you can relate to this, one of my old bosses, Brian, and people would type him emails all day long that were brain.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd say, I'm not hiring you. Just not hiring you.
Yes,
you can't figure out my name.
I'm not replying.
I called you Keith, but I really think Kevin introduced you as Keith.
That's possible.
I just have to say that because I'm usually pretty good, and I actually remember thinking, why Keith and Kevin is just way too close together. So
it's possible. Let's blame it on Kevin.
I would like to do that. Maybe he thought you were like Brian Keith, like the actor, you know? There was drinking involved. There's drink,
and you know, Kevin has been known to occasionally imbibe.
Really?
Just occasionally.
Huh. Just a pinch. Did not know. Just a mere sip. That's all.
He was at your
Geek Gala.
Geek Gala.
Yeah, he performed.
Yeah, he performed.
He and Julie, so... Yeah, he did pretty well. Honorable mention.
Cool.
So, yeah. He got tickets to the Robot Johnson show coming up on December 7th.
Ooh. It's at Evening Muse.
Yeah. Get your tickets now. Best of show. We already got our tickets. So, yeah, always a good time. But before you go to the Robot Johnson show, before you go find out how much Kevin Patterson actually imbibed, go to see the Cartage Theater production of An Apology. That's what I'm going to call it.
That's what I call it on social media, An Apology, ..
Yeah. But for those of you playing at home, An Apology for the Course and Outcome of Certain Events delivered by Dr. John Faustus on this, his final evening. But the final evening is actually like six more evenings, just to be clear.
We run through Sunday, the 17th. Okay. Showtimes are 8 o'clock on Friday and Saturday and 2 o'clock matinee on Sunday.
Right on. Okay.
For all of you not watching the Panthers games.
Yeah. Which is most of our audience?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. There's, you know, although you never know. Like the geek population has widened, and there is some crossover between the geek population and the sports population.
Well, because they have a furry.
Yes, exactly.
Surfer. I'm just trying to make Starnes Lord spit up every time he drinks out of his cup of coffee.
I've noticed your timing on that.
Timing is always for that, but I failed miserably. Yes. But then again, you're like sitting in front of the computer, which I really don't want you to spit all over. So. But hey, so Brian, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you guys for inviting me.
Absolutely.
And again, thanks.
We are part of the Low Voice Talking podcast today. Have you noticed that? We're all doing our low voice.
Yeah, I'm not doing a low voice.
I'm just stuck with
a low voice. But thanks again for everything you did this weekend. That was really great. And I said this to you earlier. I'll say it again. I've been to a bunch of those events, and I've rarely seen the... Like, everyone was having a good time. The folks who were wandering around, the visitors, the vendors, everyone was smiling. Everybody was friendly. And that's not always the case with those types of events. So you should be really proud of yourself.
Well,
and
thank you.
Did good.
We try to make a good community out of it. So I think it shows. And it's because we have some great, amazing people helping us. So we're very thankful for that. I had a great time. I know that. Starnes Lord was a little run ragged, but...
Oh, I always have fun, though.
He has fun. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying we make him work.
And when I see, you know, it's like I saw my old boss came, you know, with his daughter and stuff, and it just, those little moments like just give me a little bit of extra energy to get through it, and it's, you know, a little bit of happiness. It's like, wow, you came out to this. This is cool. It's
a yay moment.
Absolutely.
Yay. It was also an interesting venue, I thought, for something like that. You know, you had the inside and the outside going. And you had the sword fighters.
Yeah, we had the sword fighters. Fun. We had the music tent. We had, you could get henna or fairy hair in your hair. You could get, we had the kids. Did your son go by the steam tent? Did he try to do one of the science crafts?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, not the steam tent. The worm tent. There was a worm.
Oh, that was the steam thing.
Okay.
That was one side of it. Yeah.
Yeah, they had different things every hour.
I think the steam had gone by the wayside. And then I'm horrible. I'm forgetting the gentleman's name. The author, the
John Hartness.
Yes,
Falstaff.
I amazing. See. I see him all over the place.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He said, "This is this is about you." But we have found that every podcast has a little bit about me, right? He actually he told us at the end of the event that we were his third highest grossing event of the year. And there's two caveats. First of all, it was November. So that means he had 11 months of previous things. And this, like you said, he's at everything and he travels all over. But the other thing he told me is he's like, you need to realize third largest. And some of those are 3 and 4 day events.
Right.
So we were pretty pleased. And I had a couple people come up and say that they did double of what they had done past years. So.
Which is great. You know, that's got to be, you know, so
that's what I want for them.
So satisfying for you guys.
We're working on the dates for next year. We have run into a little bit of a glitch because as we keep bringing people to Noah's gets more popular. And so they ended up booking a bunch of dates. So we're trying to figure out a day to do it over there. But they are like, we want to work with you. We want to figure it out. So
they've been a great partner.
We like could said, not have done it without them.
Space is so unique,
them.
And they can do business stuff there. There's a lot of weddings there, and then they were jazzed because the first time they ever did anything like this.
Yeah.
So
a venue like that just gives us so much flexibility because a hotel wouldn't necessarily let us bring in the food trucks. There wouldn't be a place for the music tent. You know, the whole bringing in of the snakes and stuff like that. Not always a fan.
Hotels, so. Snakes. You know, there's probably some insurance you got
to
get there.
Well, yeah, I did have to kind of coach Eric from Eastern Exotics. I was like, can you not wander through the inside because there's so much glass and stuff? If somebody gets freaked and jumps back, I don't have insurance to pay for somebody's glass stuff.
I really enjoyed the inside outside aspect of it. I really thought that was a nice change because, as I'm sure you know, these conventions are great, but you're in a big barn and you know. The air gets a little stale in there, and the sound is always bouncing off everything, and it sort of psychologically wears on you, no matter how much fun you're having. And so, being able to go outside, still have things to see, still have vendors out there, when the sword fighting and the cars and that was such a nice change of pace. It allowed me to stay there longer than perhaps I would have in a different situation.
That's my evil plan. There's two parts to my evil plan. Number one is like, go get some food. And while you're doing that, the food truck's right by the music tent. So go have a seat in the music tent. And then while you're in the music tent, you're thinking, maybe I should go back and look at that t-shirt one more time. Maybe I go look at that book that I was thinking about.
That,
you know,
ivory seam ripper.
Yeah.
A great Christmas present.
Yeah. And then the other thing is the scavenger hunt for the kids, because it forces you to the search for Gringotts gold, because I strategically place the riddles all throughout the event. So if you do the scavenger hunt with your kids, it ensures you don't miss parts of the event.
Oh, so, that's cool.
So each of the rooms has at least one gold holder, and then the people out back have gold, and then the people on the side have gold, and then the people over with the reptiles have gold.
Yes.
So that way you go and see everything, and that makes sure that you wander around everything. So, but now you know my secret.
Yeah, well, it's good.
So I'm going to have to kill you. We're going to have to edit that part out. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Hey, Brian. So for the third time, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. An apology for the course and outcome of certain events delivered by Dr. John Faustus on This Is Final Evening, Friday, Saturday, Sunday at the Warehouse Pack. Code word diary to get $5 off. Thank you so very much for inviting me.
Absolutely.
Thanks for coming.
You've been listening to Guardians of the Geekery. Find us on the web at guardiansofthegeekery.com and everywhere fine podcasts are found. Support the Charlotte Geeks at patreon.com/charlottegeeks. Tune in next time for another exciting adventure on Guardians of the Geekery.